Reading from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhagavat Mrichimala, which is the explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam. He's taken approximately 1,000 verses or 1,100 verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, what he considers to be essential verses which describe the totality of Vedic knowledge. Totality of Vedic knowledge is divided into three categories: Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojana. Sambandha means the foundation, the basis, the beginning. And Avideya means the practice, the methodology, the practical application of the basic knowledge and the foundational principles. And then the conclusion of that, or the final point or culmination of all that, is called the goal, or the final point, the ultimate necessity. That's called Prayojan. In simple terms, Sambandha means me and God, God and I. And Avideya means service to God. And Prayojana means pure love of God. So this is, first we had knowledge. That's called theoretical knowledge. And then we put it into practice. Then we realize it. So knowledge, practice, and realization. Knowledge is Sambandha again. And practice is Avideya. And realization is Prayojana. So if you only have knowledge, you don't put it into practice, that's incomplete. If you have knowledge and practice and you don't realize it, then it's also incomplete. So the full realization of transcendental knowledge and the perfection of the devotional practices is to attain pure love of God and return to Krishna. So this is what is Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojana. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes these three principles of philosophy in 18,000 verses. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has chosen approximately 1,100 verses to summarize these three principles, Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojana, and has presented it in this book, Bhagavat Arka Mrichimala. He's presenting it in 20 rays. He calls ray as his chapter because Arka means, Amrichi means ray of sun or ray of light. Arka is sun or light, like Konark, sun temple. The first three rays, which we're discussing now, is a preliminary to establish the basic praman. Yesterday we discussed evidence or praman, or proof. Proof for transcendental knowledge. Where do we find it? The best expression of transcendental knowledge, where do we find the clearest understanding of Godhead? And that's in the Vedas. There are all kinds of holy books in the world, Quran, Bible, Tibetan Book of the Dead, or Urantia Book, many, many kinds of holy books and metaphysical books scattered throughout the world, describing Godhead and the existential reality. But there are, most of them are all produced by imperfect beings who are subject to the frailties of conditional life, imperfect senses, tendency to commit mistake, be illusioned, and cheating propensity. So therefore, these scriptures are not perfect. But the Vedas are actually coming from the breathing of God. Vishnu exhaled and from his breathing came the Vedas. And the Vedas were eternally existing as Shabda Brahman. Shabda means sound and Brahman means spiritual. Transcendental spiritual sound has been eternally existing since the beginning of creation. As creation is always vibrating and always in movement. So this Vedic knowledge has always been vibrating in the ethers. And then the great souls, the realized souls that are beyond the limitations of conditional life because of their perfection in yoga, meditation, they're able to tap into this knowledge. Sometimes the materialistic people, they have some vague conception of this principle, and they call it the Akashic Record. Akash means sky, we say. Pumir apo nalo vayu kamano buddhireva. So the subtle layer before man or mind is called kam or ether. Ether is a vehicle which transfers sound. If you take out ether, there's no sound. Ether means kam, kham. So this transcendental sound, so they say Akashic Record. Akash means ether. And these material metaphysicians and so-called spiritualists of the world, Western world, they sometimes describe the Akashic Record, and they say that everything that's ever been vibrated or anything that's ever been said is contained within the Akashic Record. And there are some mystics and mediums that can actually, through some type of sensitivity or higher perception, can read that Akashic Record or tap into that Akashic Record. There was a famous doctor, lived in the 1930s in America. His name was Edgar Cayce, E-D-G-A-R-C-A-Y-C-E, and he wrote about 50 books on medicine, and he didn't know how to write his name. He just dictated the books. He didn't go to any school, didn't go to any medical school. And he was born in a village in America somewhere. Edgar Cayce, famous book. He started an institute called Association for Research and Enlightenment, A-R-E-R, Association of Research. He wrote many, many books, and quite interesting and very advanced books in terms of Western outlook and Western philosophy on metaphysics. He wrote on Edgar Cayce on reincarnation, Edgar Cayce on medicine. And they inquired from him. He said, "Where are you getting all this knowledge? I mean, you didn't study. You didn't read." And he said, "I'm seeing this in the Akashic Record. I'm bringing this knowledge down from the Akashic Record." So, of course, he was unique, and a whole institute developed around him and a whole following in America and around the world. Quite an interesting, learned personality, Edgar Cayce. So the great sages of India, because they, by perfecting their consciousness and elevating their minds to a purified state, they were actually able to hear the Shabda Brahman, the spiritual sound which is eternally vibrating since the beginning of the universe. They would hear it and then follow it and realize the teachings, and that's called, and they were all, in Satyuga, they were all called Shrutidhara. And Satyuga people are all Shrutidhara. Shruti means hearing. Whatever they heard, they could hold. Dhara means to hold. Haladhara, Muralidhara means to hold. Hold the flute, hold the plow. Dharani, another name for the earth, Mother Bhumi, is called Sridharani, because she's holding this planet. And she's holding all of us. We are being supported by the earth. If the earth goes away from our feet, then we fall inside. It's called earthquake. When the earth cracks, you go inside and say bye-bye. Haribo, good night. It's all over. You know, 50,000 people die in a second. It happens, they have earthquakes. You must have heard. 30,000 people, finish. 100,000. You can finish, Bombay can finish in 1 second. It's split open the earth, everybody go inside, good night. Haribo. Have a disco down there. Hell, go to hell and have a disco. So Dharani, she's holding us up. So these Shrutidharas, they would hear, by their meditation, they would hear this transcendental sound which was originated with the breathing of Vishnu. And they would draw down this transcendental knowledge. And for the benefit of those, then it was passed on. They would teach their disciples. They were Shrutidhara, their disciples were Shrutidhara. And there's no books, nothing written down. Then with the onset of the age, or the progress of the ages, into Treta Yuga, then people diminished. The first quality diminished in Treta Yuga was austerity. In Satya Yuga, the Dharma, Mrisha Dharma, the bull of religion, was standing on four legs. Satyam, truthfulness, Tapa, austerity, and Doya, mercy, and Shocham, cleanliness. Everyone was very clean, inside and out. Their minds are clean, their bodies are clean, their lifestyles are clean. And they're very austere. And by that power, that tapabalam, power of that austerity, they were able to realize so many things. Chanaka Pandit says in Niti Shastra, unless one controls his senses, he cannot be trusted. So therefore, you can't trust anybody. You can't trust yourself. Because we don't control our senses either. So, seeing the need, because they're diminishing, austerity diminished in Satyuga. There was austerity. Then with the beginning of the inception of Treta Yuga, then austerity diminished. Not immediately, but gradually. It was a long period of time. This Treta Yuga was 1.3 million years long. So So austerity went down gradually more and more. So when austerity went down, then power went down, because austerity gives power. That's why we say tapabalam. So one of the austerity went down, diminished gradually in Treta Yuga, and so did people's memories. Because memories are a byproduct of tapasya. So therefore the sages, all this knowledge was handed down in Satyuga to shoot from Shrutidhara to Shrutidhara. There was no need for writing. But seeing the diminishing of power of memory due to the lack of austerity in Treta Yuga, then they started to write down the Vedas. So whatever they heard in Shrutidhara, which is the breath of Vishnu vibrating forever in the universe, and they passed on to their disciples, that same transcendental knowledge is called Shabda Brahman. Shabda sound, Brahman, transcendental. That transcendental sound which they heard and spoke, now they wrote it down. And this became the Vedas, the Shrutis. And then became the Smritis, and then Brahmanas and Vedangas and Ramayana, Mahabharata, Itihasas, etc. So this is something about the origin of the Vedas. So this was discussed, we discussed this yesterday. How the Vedas came this way, then finally the essence of all the Vedas, then seeing a need to codify all that Vedic knowledge that he compiled. Vedavyas summarized it all in Vedanta Sutra. And he was teaching Vedanta Sutra, but then he was seeing that some of his students that were appearing just at the juncture of, or at the very end of Dwapara Yuga, they couldn't understand the sutras. Sarvakalvidam Brahma, Tatvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, Janmadyasya Yataha, Anavriti Shabdat. There's so many sutras of the Vedas, and they, Soham, Om Tat Sat, and they're like, what's that? Sarvakalvidam Brahma. So they couldn't understand. So then he thought, and they would even ask him when he was describing these Vedanta sutras, they said, can you explain in some analogy or some story? Tell us a story. Can you tell us a story, Daddy, and help us understand this philosophy? So then he was seeing that there should be some need, and he was also feeling some lacking in himself. Although, as I mentioned in yesterday's class, that Vyasadeva had described the pastimes of Krishna. They're described fairly extensively in Padma Puran, Krishna's Leela in Braj, Mathura, and Dwarka, and also in Vishnu Puran, and briefly mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. But he was not satisfied with those 18 Puranas. He was despondent. So then his guru Narada Muni appeared to him. And he said, the thing is, you wrote about Krishna's Leela in various Purans, Padma, Vishnu Puran, etc., and Bhagavat Puran. But you didn't really bring out the Ras. The Rasa. Rasa Varjam Rasopya Se Puran Jusvadni Vardhate. You didn't actually bring out the Rasa Krishna's relationships. You gave, like, as I mentioned yesterday, you took pictures. I take pictures of your family. So here's Brajmohan's family. So does that give you a very good picture of what they are? You just see their face at that particular time, what they feel, what they believe in, what they think, how they love, how they speak. You don't know anything. So these other descriptions of Krishna's Leela that Vyasadeva gave in his initial writing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they were like pictures of Krishna's Leela. There's no feeling there. Krishna did this and Krishna did that. A demon came and he killed him. And you see, like for example, Rasa Leela in Vishnu Puran is only a few verses. Very, very short. So then he sat down and he went into samadhi, as I said, and then in his samadhi he was able to see Krishna Leela. And then he rewrote the Srimad Bhagavatam and then added the life. Krishna manifested there. Because of his samadhi, Krishna entered his heart and manifested through his language. So that language became known as samadhi bhashya. Bhashya means language, the language of samadhi. So then the Bhagavatam, then instead of having a few verses describe Rasa Leela, became five chapters. So many verses, 150 or 200, whatever it is. And then Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second edition, the final edition, then he became satisfied because it was full of Rasa, full of Bhav. So this is how what we were describing yesterday. the appearance of the Bhagavatam. So these are the rays, preliminary rays. So now, this is the second chapter, which he calls the second ray. This is the advent of the sun-like Srimad Bhagavatam. The second ray of Bhagavat Marichimala describes the original, unique meaning and purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam and its appearance. The Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the topmost religious principles of pure devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pure transcendental religious principles are completely devoid of the cheating propensity. What is a cheating propensity? There are two kinds of cheating, small cheating and great cheating. Chota cheating and Bharo cheating. Black lie and white lie. So, the three desires, these are the three desires, namely the desire to enjoy in the material world, this material body, is called Indriya Sukh. To enjoy this world, Indriya means senses, sense pleasure. Desire to, in the second category, desire for attaining in the higher planets, is called Swarga Sukh. These are certainly kind of cheating. But the endeavor to merge into the existence of God, Brahma Sukh, Brahma Suja Mukti, becoming one with God, is undoubtedly the greatest cheating. Pure devotional service to Lord Krishna is devoid of all these cheating propensities. So the cheating propensity is the enjoying tendency to enjoy this material world and body and go to the higher planets and the heavenly planets, enjoy that aspect of the material world, higher material pleasures. And that's what everyone's doing now. They have a certain standard of income and they enjoy certain physical pleasures. And they think, oh, if I can only make some more money. Now I have a Maruti 800. But if I make more money, I can buy a Honda City. If I make more money, I buy a Mercedes. Everyone wants more. Oh, I'm not happy with this Honda City. Look, he has a Mercedes. Oh, yeah, I want a Mercedes. Then if the money comes in your hand, then you'll buy a Mercedes. Then if you have a Mercedes and then more money comes in your hand, they say, oh, I want a Porsche. I have all these desires, which are all Maya. They don't have nothing to do with pure. They're all cheating because they keep the soul bound in prison. And the Durga in the prison house. So any desire for anything or anyone of this world is cheating. So this pure transcendental religious principles are completely devoid of the cheating propensity. So this is the unique quality of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no cheating in it. All the other Vedic literature is full of cheating. Because they give you, they provide facility for you to get to cheat yourself. They provide facility for you to become healthy, to live a long life, to live comfortably, to go to higher planets, to stay in the material world. So that's why they're cheating. So he starts off, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur starts off this chapter by saying, obeisances, Mangalacharan, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Chandraya Namaha. I offer my obeisances to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Chandra. Gauranga Kripaya Yasya Tattvam Bhagavato Ditam Sampraptam Ridye Vande Sarvabhoma Mahashayam. I offer my obeisances to Sri Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya, in whose heart the science of Srimad Bhagavatam was manifested by the mercy of Gauranga. So here, to begin his book, he's invoking the mercy of Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya, who was, of course, a Naya, a logician, and a famous acharya and teacher of Jagannath Puri, Brahmin, and he became converted to Vaishnava conception by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He was an associate of Lord Chaitanya. And he taught him the science of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a famous discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita between Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya, where Lord Sarvabhoma said, can you explain to me the meaning of the Atmaram verse? Atmaram Aschamuniyam. That the Atmaram Munis, even someone who's Atmaram, who takes pleasure in herself, this verse goes on to say, that they find relish in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in that particular discussion with Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya gave 18 different descriptions, gave 18 different commentaries on this verse, Atmaramas Chamonio. And later he met with Sanatana Goswami, and he also discussed this verse, and he gave 61 different meanings. So why is the difference? Why at one time Lord Chaitanya gave 61 meanings, another time 18? Do you have any idea?
The qualification of the hearer.
Yes, that's very, very correct answer. He is saying, Savya Sachin Prabhu was saying that in the association, while he was speaking the Atmaramas Chumunio verse to Sarvabhauma, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu revealed 18 meanings because of the qualification. He was a logician, basically he was a Mayavadi before. So somehow in his association, this is what came out. And then when he was associating with Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami was a devotee from his birth. He's a Saraswat Brahmin. His parent, of course, his family originally comes from Himalayas, the origin of all Saraswat Brahmins. And he was from now he had come from South India. He had hailed from South India. He was employed in Navadvip, in the government there, as a minister or treasurer or something, prime minister or something. And from his childhood, he was studying Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, he had a dream once. Sanatana Goswami had a dream. In his dream, he was about 7 or 8 years old in a dream, and some beautiful boy came and presented him a Bhagavatam. He said, "You should study this. You'll attain all perfection." And then the next day, he woke up. He said, "What a dream." And then that day, some boy came to his house and gave him Bhagavatam. So he considered that that boy was actually Krishna. So he wrote one commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, one glorification of Bhagavatam. I forget what it's called right now. But he also wrote commentaries on the verses, but he wrote another glorification of the book itself. So from his childhood he was studying Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was a great devotee of the Lord. And he and his brother, Rupa Goswami, they lived in Ramkeli, and that, which is, I think, Bangladesh. And when they were growing up, they used to enact Krishna's pastimes. So they're very much devoted, very much pure devotees from birth. So when Lord Chaitanya was speaking the Atmaramas Chamonio verse to Sanatana Goswami, he felt so ecstatic in his association. And the ocean of bhakti was rising in so many waves. So in the association of such a highly qualified devotee as Sanatana Goswami, 61 meanings of the verse were revealed from the mouth of Lord Chaitanya. So it's a fact that the quality, the adhikara qualification of the hearer determines the content of the speech being delivered by the speaker. Of course, if the speaker is not very qualified, then he can't speak high qualified or highly evolved knowledge. So therefore, when they're a very qualified audience, if they meet with someone who's not qualified, they don't feel satisfied. "I feel this speaker is not satisfying me because he's not understanding my qualification, or else his realization is less than mine." So this is a very much a principle of hearing and chanting. So Sarvabhauma, he heard the science, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur is offering respect to him. Then he begins, because this chapter is called "The Advent of the Sun-like Srimad Bhagavatam." So it begins by the last chapter, first ray, began with the first verse of Bhagavatam. And this chapter begins with the second verse, which establishes this is the entry to the Bhagavatam. This whole book is 11 or 1200 verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam to establish the purpose of life and the means to attain it. Before we approach the Bhagavatam, we have to find out whether we're qualified to get in. It's like a movie theater. They have some movies where only adults are allowed to go to the movie. So there's someone standing out there where they're selling the tickets. "Show me your ID." "You have ID? You look like you're 12 years old." "No, no, I'm 20. "Nah, you look like a little kid." He shows some fake license or something. He shows his ID, he's 20. "Okay, you go. If you're young, you can't go. Print adults only." I don't know about India, but in America they have movies like this. Only adults, which means no one else, no child would want to see anyway. So it's only adults. So people try to sneak in, so they have to check ID. So the Bhagavatam is the same way. We have to check your ID and see whether you have the qualification to go. So the second verse is a checking, ID checking, security clearance. Before we enter into the confidential regions of the Federal Reserve Bank or into the private quarters of the Prime Minister, we have to be some security checking, right? Can you just walk into the bedroom of the Prime Minister? Say, look, I'm an Indian, excuse me. All the guys with machine guns and CID and black cats and green cats and all these kind of cats are there. The machine guns and landmines and hand grenades and detectors and all kinds of things. What do they call it? Metal detectors. You can just say, hey, look, I'm Indian. What is this? You can't stop me. He's my prime minister. I'm going to sit on the edge of the bed with him and talk to him like Krishna Arjuna. You can do that. So much qualifications required. So much security check. Who are you? What is your bona fides? What is your introduction? No, don't you know I drive a rickshaw in Delhi? I drive a rickshaw in Chandni Chowk. I have a high qualification. Achcha. Well, get out of here. So we think we can go. And this Srimad Bhagavatam, this is not the bedroom of the Prime Minister. This is the bedroom of Radha and Krishna. Nikunj Leela. It's called Nibriti Nikunj. Nibriti Nikunj means the confidential, private flower bed of Radha and Krishna. This is being revealed in the 10th canto. So any rickshaw wala can jump into this Nikunj? There must be qualification. Adhikar. So this verse, Sukadeva Goswami gives the Adhikar. Dharma prochitakai tavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastamatra vastu shivadam tapatra yon mulanam shrimad bhagavate mahamuni kritekyam vapara ishvaraha sadyo ridyavarudya tetra kritibi shushushibi tatshanat. Pure devotional service, which is completely devoid of cheating. Dharma prochita kaitavo. Kaitavo means cheating. Kaitav. Prochita throws out any cheating. Shuddha bhakti is devoid of cheating, which is the only means for attaining the ultimate goal of life. And such pure devotion is attained only by non-envious, merciful, saintly persons. This devotion has been instructed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was compiled by the great Mahamuni, Vyasadeva. The Srimad Bhagavatam imparts knowledge of the living entity's relationship with the Supreme Lord, which is auspicious and destroys the threefold miseries. So that's the translation of the verse. So this is the point that all this cheating, if we have any of this cheating within us, if we're covered, if these coverings are there, these coverings prevent us from entering the sublime teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We may enter and we may read, but we won't derive much benefit. Just like if a 5-year-old child enters an adult movie and watches what's going on, he won't get very much benefit. He won't really understand very much what's going on. As a matter of fact, he'll run away. What is this? Funny stuff going on here. So to get the benefit of Srimad Bhagavatam, then there's some qualification. So if any of these coverings are there, this cheating covering, then we will not get the benefit. So that cheating is also explained by Rupa Goswami. Anya vilashita shunyam gyana karmadi ramritam. Hanukalyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. That these are coverings, anya avilash, other desires. So cheating means other desires. Dharma prochita kaitavo. Kaitavo means other desires, anya avilash. So coverings of avilash, gyana and karma. Coverings of desire, aspirations for knowledge or control or controlling power, and karma, desires to enjoy this body, this world, higher worlds, or even the spiritual happiness of Brahmananda. That's also denies one entrance to the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a covering. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a purport to this verse. Srimad Bhagavatam, first verse. First chapter, second verse. Sri Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, absorption in matter, consisting of the three modes of material nature, results in threefold miseries. Forgetfulness of one's real identity is the first misery. Generally, we think that the threefold miseries are something else. Adi-daivika klesh, adi-bhautika klesh, atmika klesh, and daivika. Miseries of the body and mind, miseries caused by other living entities, and miseries caused by nature. It's too cold, it's too windy, it's too hot, it's too dry, it's too wet. These are different kinds of miseries. But he's saying something else. Absorption in matter consisting of three modes of nature results in threefold misery. So when we're absorbed in material energy, when we're absorbed in this material body, thinking I am man, I am woman, all these things, then what happens? Forgetfulness of one's real identity. This is the first material misery. That's interesting. Very interesting outlook. The first material misery is to forget our identity. Say you are Mr. Birla, and you're very wealthy. And you went for a walk one day in the beach, some beach in Bombay where the rich people live, wherever that is. And somehow you tripped and you fell on the beach and hit your head on a rock. Dong. Then when you stood up, who am I? I don't know. I feel very strange. Where am I going? And you don't have any wallet, you're just out in your gym shorts running or something. And you forget that you're Mr. Birla. What is this called? Amnesia. You've heard this? Amnesia. It's a disease where you forget. You get conked on the head and your motherboard crashes. Your motherboard crashes and you forget who you are. You have to reboot. But there's no way to reboot. There's no reboot button. You can't just go, doink. Oh, Mr. Birla. No, it's... Then rebooting means you go to a psychiatrist, you go to a hypnotist, you bring in your relatives, and they say, look, I'm your wife. Huh? Who? Huh? I'm your wife, remember me? Huh? You gave me 10 kids, I gave you 10 kids. Who? Kids? What kids? No kids, I don't have any kids. So this is amnesia, total forgetfulness. So this would be very painful for him, being a Kroropati and then forgetting who you are. And just then he has to start wandering around the streets. He doesn't know where his house is. He doesn't know where he left, where his Mercedes is. He doesn't know where his driver is waiting to pick him up. He's just wandering around. And all that opulence, all that comfort, all that fame, all that wonderful position that he had, it's lost in a second. Just by getting conked on the head. So this is the first material misery, to forget one's real identity. So this person was, Mr. Birla is living in the lap of luxury. But if he gets conked on the head and gets amnesia, then he really becomes miserable. So the jiva, when the jiva is connected to Krishna and serving him, then it's a very blissful state of life. Kevala ananda kanda. Parama karuna pahandui jana nitai gora chandra. So this is Kevalananda, it's blissful. But when we forget our real identity, then that's the first material misery. Forgetting that we're Krishna's eternal parts and parcels. Forgetting that we're Krishna's eternal servants. Thinking that I am this body, I am the enjoyer, I am separate, I am independent. This is all forgetfulness. This is all ignorance. We're not independent at any stage of the game. We're not the controllers at any stage of the game. So forgetfulness of one's real identity is the first material misery. And what's the second material misery? Aversion to Krishna. So it's called Krishna Bahirmukh. First forgetfulness, then look away. To consider the material body as a self is the third material misery. So we forget. Our first material misery is forgetting our real identity as eternal spirit souls. The second material misery is turn away from God, turn away from Krishna consciousness. And the third material misery is to think, oh, I'm the body, let's enjoy, forget about all this spiritual life. What is all this hearing, chanting, Mangalarti? It's all bogus. It's all a waste of time. Forget about these beads and all this vegetarian stuff. Or I'm missing all the fun in life. Let's get down to business. Party. Party's on. To consider the material body as a self is the third material misery. Knowledge of the absolute truth means to understand that Krishna is one without a second. Actual knowledge of relationship is to know that the Lord possesses three principal energies, namely the spiritual energy, the marginal energy, the material energy. Antaranga Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti, and Tatastha Shakti. Knowing their relationship is Sambandha Gyan, the relationship between the energies and the energetic, or between Krishna and his energies. The living entities are eternal servants of Krishna, and Krishna is eternally worshipable. Just by awakening one's service attitude, resulting from an accumulation of previous pious activities, one can bind Krishna within the heart with the rope of love without waiting for another lifetime or process. Therefore, what is the need for any other literature than Srimad Bhagavatam? Because Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the art of binding Krishna. Just like Mother Yashoda, she showed the art of binding Krishna. They have the art of living, the art of dying, the art of chanting Hare Krishna. All these arts are there. The art of binding Krishna is called Yashoda Damodar Sambandha or Bandana. She bound Krishna. How did she bind Krishna? By her love, Bhakta Vatsalya. By her pure affection of her heart, her Vatsalya Bhav. She had that affection, and she expressed her affection by activity. You may say, I love you, and then the wife says to the husband, no, I love you. So the husband says, all right, so you can cook something? Oh, no, you get out of here. Go to the restaurant. So love is expressed by action. So Mother Yashoda had intense love for Krishna, but that was not enough to bind Krishna. Just to have intense motherly love was not enough to bind Krishna. She had to express her love. So her love was expressed by endeavor. She endeavored greatly to express her love. Because one aspect of vatsalya, or motherly love, is correction. The mother must nourish her child, feed him, and protect him, but she must also correct him. Because he misbehaves sometimes. He cracks the yogurt pot and runs around all over the floor, freshly cleaned floor. He runs all over with yogurt foot and puts yogurt footprints everywhere. And then he calls in the crows and feeds the crows. And then they catch some yogurt and drop all over the furniture. And then fast poop on the furniture. So the baby can make a big mess. So then she has to correct him. This is another feature of child raising. Correction, rectification of behavior, rebuking, chastisement. So in this particular expression of her motherly love, she wanted to correct Krishna for his misbehavior. She wasn't finished. She wanted to churn that yogurt into butter, to make wonderful butter, because Krishna likes makhan and misri. Butter mixed with sugar candy, misri. But before that event could happen, he cracked the pot when it was still in the yogurt stage. Out of his anger, he bit his lip and took a stick and cracked it. Then later, when she was saying, why did you crack the pot and run away? He said, I didn't crack the pot. What makes you think I cracked the pot? You were in a hurry to go get that milk on the burning milk on the stove, and your ankle bell hit the pot. I didn't crack the pot. You went by. You didn't even notice. I was watching. Your ankle bell, jing, 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 and you hit in your excitement to run to the stove. You cracked the pot with your own ankle bell. Why are you blaming me? Then I got scared when it cracked and made a big sound, and all that yogurt went all over the floor. I got very scared and I ran away. And when I ran away, there some yogurt got on my feet and went all over the floor. It's your fault, not mine. Why are you trying to blame me? So like this, she expressed her love by correcting him, and to correct him she had to endeavor a lot. She had to tie him up, and she tried and tried and tried. So love is not enough. There must be action. So the action of love is devotion. Love in action means devotional service. So she tried with a lot of action, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Not blood, but sweat and tears. Let's say milk. As milk is a transformation of blood. So a lot of milk pouring from her breast, which is blood, transformation of blood. A lot of milk pouring from her breast and sweat and tears. She endeavored to tie up Krishna. But that alone was not enough to bind Krishna. Not even love is love or expression of love or endeavor. But still there's one other component of that binding process. And the other component is Krishna's mercy. Krishna Kripa. Kripa Karo. Bhagavan Sharanagati. Hey Bhagavan. Sharanagati. Kripa Karo. Give your mercy. So the combination of Krishna's mercy and the devotional endeavor of a pure devotee, when these two come together, then it's possible to bind the Lord. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that he's giving a very nice definition of sambandha. Because sambandha, we say sambandha gyan. Gyan means knowledge. And sam means complete, and bandha means binding, tying. So when our knowledge is complete, then we can, when we have transcendental knowledge, we can bind Krishna. So he's saying, what is the definition of sambandha gyan? By awakening one's service attitude, one can bind Krishna within the heart with the rope of love without waiting for another lifetime. So the meaning of sambandha gyan is to awaken one's service attitude by hearing transcendental knowledge. And when that attitude awakens as a result of accumulating transcendental knowledge, then one can bind Krishna within the heart with the rope of love. And that's sambandha. Sambandha. The gyan, the purpose of the gyan or the knowledge is to come to the point of service. And the point of service, the purpose of service, is to bind Krishna in the heart with the rope of love. And that's exactly what was proven in the Damodar Leela. That Mother Yashoda bound Krishna in her heart with the rope of love. The rope, externally there were some ropes. She gathered so many ropes for tying the calves. Thousands and thousands and thousands of meters of rope. It was insufficient to bind Krishna. Because the binding was not being done externally. Because it's impossible to externally bind Krishna. Krishna is Virata Rup. Krishna is everywhere. Anoraniyan Mahatomahiyan. He's smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. How can you tie up Krishna? Bhagavan is everywhere. Mayatatamidam sarvam avyaktamurti stani. He's everywhere. Everything is within inside Krishna, and he's outside of everything. He's outside of everything. So when you start to bind him, you say, I can't find the end of Krishna. I go all along throughout the whole universe. I can't find where there's no Krishna. Everywhere Krishna is there. So finally she bound him. She bound him within her heart. And how did she do that? The heart is only like this big. So she bound him. And then what rope did she use? She used a rope tying her hair. It's a little rope, a little tiny rope. She had her hair like this. She had to tie a little rope. She was so exasperated. All these ropes are piling up and I can't tie him. And, oh, Krishna, what is this? And she's crying. So first she actually bound him within her heart. And it says here, her service attitude was so pure that she bound Krishna within her heart with the rope of love. So that rope of love was her love. I mean, that binding rope was her pure love. And Krishna allowed himself to be bound by his mercy, reciprocating with his devotee. So then, to actually externally show that she did some binding, she was, this rope. And she took this little rope and just tied it around his waist and bound him with a hair rope. And that rope is about as big as if you tied a rope around the heart, it would be about that big. And your heart's like this big, and tied a rope. And Krishna's waist was like this. Baby. So this is being told, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that this is, Bhagavatam will teach us this sambandha gyan, avideya prayojana. So since this chapter is called the advent of the sun-like Srimad Bhagavatam, after establishing, this is often the standard in Gaudiya Vaishnava Bhakti Granths, devotional scriptures, that first, in the first verse, first or second verse of the chapter, the author will give some Mangalacharan and then give a summary of the chapter. For example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, each chapter begins with a Mangalacharana. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Different types of Mangalacharana. glorifying Nishchadev, Lord Chaitanya and Panchatattva. And then the chapter begins with a Sanskrit verse, because Krishnadas Kaviraj is a great poet and great scholar, and of course he wrote, before he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, he wrote Govinda Lilamrita, which is a beautiful expose of Krishna's Lila, all written in Sanskrit. So he was a master of Sanskrit. So he begins each chapter of the Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita, which he wrote in Bengali, but he begins with one verse from in Sanskrit. In that Sanskrit verse, he summarizes what he's going to mention in this chapter. Then after that, he begins unfolding those points in the story and teachings of that chapter in Bengali language, which is called Navadvipa Bhasha. So in the same way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in this beginning verse here, he's establishing that the Bhagavatam is beyond cheating, and in his purport to this verse, Dharma Prajitikaita Vocha Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam, then he explains that this Bhagavatam will teach us Sambandha Gyan Avideya Prayojana. And now he goes back to his original theme, which is the advent or the appearance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he quotes so many verses to describe how it came about. So we've selected a few, and then we'll just mention some of those. So this describes the birth of Vyas. Dvapare samanuprapte tritiya yugapariye jata parashrad yogi asavyam kalayahare. This is from Suta Goswami in the first Kanta Bhagavatam, 4th chapter, verse 14. Suta Goswami said, in Dvapara Yuga, which is the third in the cycle of four yugas, the great yogi Vedavyas, who is an empowered incarnation of Krishna, says Kalaya Hari, he's Hari Kala, he's an expansion of Hari. He's actually Shaktivesh. He took birth from Parashara Muni in the womb of Vasavi, who is also known as Satyavati. And then, of course, he grew up, and then it explains how he divided the Vedas later in his life. This is 1.4.18. Durbhagamscha janan vikshya munir divyena chakshusha sarva varnashraman amannam yad tadyo hitam amogadrik. When that omniscient sage, Vedavyas, saw the future through transcendental vision, he saw in the future there will be a gradual deviation in religious principles in the course of the yugas, resulting from the influence of the unmanifested yet powerful time factor. And he saw that ordinary people would become very unfortunate. So he divided the Veda into four for the expansion of sacrifice. Rigyayu Samatara Vakya Vedas Chatvara Udrita Itihasa Puranam Cha Panchamo Veda Uchyate. So Vyasadeva was born, and then later he divided the Vedas to facilitate the degradation of the people. And this is 1.4.20. Vyasadeva designated the four Vedas with the names Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva. He declared the Puranas, or histories, or the Itihasas and Puranas, Itihas means history, and Purana also means ancient stories, to be the fifth Veda, Panchama Veda. Then in text 21 he says, Tatrargveda Dara Paila Samago Jaimini Kavi Vaishampayana Evaiko Nishnato Yajusham Uta. The great sage Paila became expert in Rigveda. The poet Jaimini Rishi became expert in Samaveda. And the sage Vaishampayana became expert in Yajurveda. So these are the acharyas of the Vedas. And text 1422. Ataravangiri sam asit samantur darano muni itihasa purananam pita me ramaharshanaha. The cruel Sumantu Muni Angira became expert in Atharva Veda, and my father Ramaharshana Sutta became expert in histories and Puranas. Then it goes on that he compiled other books, Mahabharata. Then this is text 27, 1.4.27. Nati prasidad dharidya Sarasvatyas tate shucho vitar kayan divikta idam cho vachadharma vit. In spite of compiling all these Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva was unhappy. So he sat down in a solitary place on the bank of the river Saraswati and contemplated. This is 1.4.32. Tasyaivam kilam atmanam manyama anasya kidyata krishnasya naradob yagad ashramam pragudaritam. While Vyasadeva was meditating and lamenting in this way, his guru, Narada Muni, came to his ashram. Vyasadeva replied, this is Canto 1, Chapter 5, Verse 5. O Lord, it is a fact that I have mastered all the knowledge that you have taught me, yet I am not happy. O son of Brahma, Narada Rishi, please tell me the cause of my dissatisfaction. I inquire about this from you. Then Narada Muni answered in verse 8 and 9. Shri Narada Vacha Bhavatanu Dita Prayam Yasho Bhagavatamalam Yinayavaso Natushyeta Manyeta Darshanam Kilam. Narada said, O Bhadarayani, Vyasadeva, you have almost covered the transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord. I am confident that this is the cause of your dissatisfaction. This is your deficiency. Yata dharmada yashcharta muni varyanu kirtita natata vasudevasya mahima yanuvarnitaha. O great sage, you have elaborately described the four objectives of life. Dharma, art, kama, moksha. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation in the Puranas and Mahabharata. But you have not described the glories of Lord Vasudeva in the same way. Then he speaks in verse 13. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavannamo Gadrik Shuchi Shava Satya Vrato Drita Vrata Rukramasya Kila Bandha Muktaye Samadhinanu Smaratad Vicheshtitam. Shri Narada Muni told Vyasadeva, O greatly fortunate one, Mahabhaga, you are transcendental, Amogadrik, and your fame is uncontaminated. You are supremely truthful and self-controlled. Therefore, if you separate your spiritual existence from the existence of material conceptions through devotional samadhi, then you can see the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. Please describe the transcendental pastimes of the most powerful Lord Krishna to help all living entities get liberation from material bondage. Samadhin anusmaratad vicheshtitam. Vicheshtitam means the lila. Vichitra cheshtitam. Cheshtitam means activities and vishesh. Vishesh chitra means very special activities, which means Krishna's lila. Anusmaran. Enter samadhi and you can remember one after another. So he entered samadhi. The Gurudev told him to enter samadhi, to leave the material platform, to leave material consciousness behind, stop thinking about this material world, stop meditating on dharma, art, kama, moksha, go beyond this material world, go beyond Brahman, go beyond the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, penetrate the dazzling effulgence of the Lord, as it's told in the Upanishad. My dear Lord, please remove your dazzling effulgence. There's one verse in Anisha Upanishad. My dear Lord, please remove your dazzling effulgence so I can see your beautiful transcendental form. So Narada Muni is advising Vyasadeva, go beyond. You've only gone to Brahman. You've talked about Brahman and Dharma, Art, Kama, Moksha, and you talked about Vaikuntha liberation. Well, this is all Aishwarya. You have to penetrate the Madhurya Dham. You have to go very deep, go very high to that transcendental land of Braja Dham. And you have to see, and you'll see there. Then you can see samadhi, anusmaran. Samadhi, by samadhi, you'll be able to remember. The pastimes of Krishna will flow into your mind when you're in deep devotional samadhi. The pastimes of Krishna will flow into your mind. Anusmaran, anu means one after the other, in a sequence, one after the other. And your smaran, you'll remember Krishna's pastimes, his Mathura birth, then his transferal to Gokul, then his Gokul Leela for 3 years, and then his shift to Chatikar, and then from Chatikar to Nandagram. And then you'll remember later his Mathura Leela and Dwarka Leela. This will all come in a sequence. and your devotional samadhi. So this is what his guru said. In the next verse he said, this is how you will find the truth. This is how you'll solve your dissatisfaction. You will remove your dissatisfaction. You will remove your despondency by absorbing yourself in Krishna Leela. That's a very interesting side note one can make. Because Vedavyas compiled the Mahabharata and the Ramayana and all Itihas and the Puranas and four Shrutis. And after compiling all that, he was unhappy. He was dissatisfied, despondent. And Narada Muni is saying, now, you want to get free from unhappiness and dissatisfaction? Then you have to meditate. Samadhi anusmaran vicheshtitam. Samadhi anusmaran vicheshtitam. You have to remember, absorb your mind in the sweet pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. Then you'll become satisfied. Then you'll become joyful. Then you'll become happy. And what is the problem? What is the problem? Is it tatonyata kinchana yad vivaksata shata pritagdrishastat krita rupanamabhi nakari chit kwapi nadushtita matir labetavata hatanori vaspadam. Vyasadeva, instead of revealing Krishna's transcendental pastimes, you have somewhat covered the Sachit Ananda Krishna with Maya while describing his pastimes in the Puranas and Mahabharata. As I mentioned, Vyasadeva has already described Krishna's pastimes in Vishnu Puran, Padma Puran, and Bhagavat Puran. But Narada Muni is saying, you've somewhat covered these transcendental pastimes with some covering, with some Maya. As a result of such perverted vision, the names, forms, and qualities of Krishna have not become established as fully transcendental. Therefore, after studying all those descriptions that you gave, the hearts of materially contaminated people have not become attracted towards transcendental subject matters. Their greedy hearts have failed to reach the spiritual shore, just as a boat disturbed by a heavy wind cannot reach its destination. So, you may be a greedy materialistic person and you read the Vedas and you get so enticed and so excited about the offerings that they're giving for promotion and elevation and improvement of your material situation. And in a cursory way, you may pass over the pastimes of Krishna and Vishnu Puran and Padma Puran and Srimad Bhagavatam. But because there's nothing, there's no rasa there, you'll say, oh, okay, this thing happened. It's like looking at pictures. If you look at the pictures of someone, it's one thing. But if you go and meet the person and spend all day with him, then you can understand something more. So here's a picture of this. Here's a very beautiful girl. You keep her picture with you all day. Have a good time with this picture. So you look at the picture for some time. Say, okay, all right already. No? But if the girl comes and says, okay, now you spend all day with this beautiful girl, then I think you'll be in a lot of trouble. You'll be in a lot of Maya. So you'll have a deep experience. So this is what Narada Muni is telling him. You have somewhat covered, because when greedy materialistic people, they want sense enjoyment, when they read the Vedas and all the Vedas you've given, they may come across Krishna's pastimes, but because they're only seeing pictures and very external description and the rasa is not there, they won't get attracted. Krishna means attraction, sankarshan. So Krishna's lila is very sweet, very relishable. It's called madhurya lila, prema madhurya, lila madhurya, vena madhurya, rupa madhurya. So this sweetness has not been presented. So therefore people, I read Vishnu Puran, nothing there. I read Puran, nothing, Krishna lila. But Bhagavatam, now the new improved edition of Bhagavatam that he's about to write, and people read, and with the extensive commentaries of the acharyas, there's so much depth here. This Krishna is so interesting and so attractive. I don't want to read any other literature. I'm not interested in anything else. I'm really captivated here. In fact, I've lost all my interest in dharmart kama moksha. I don't want to go to Vaikuntha. Forget this Vaikuntha. Sit around all day and say, Om Vishnu, forget that. So this sweetness will come out in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this Rupa Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Krishna. So when one experiences that, then he can give up anything. He can give up anything and everything. But without that sweetness, it's called higher taste. Vishayavanivartante niharasya dehana rasavarjam rasopyasya pramjasvanivartate. Otherwise, the mind is so much scattered over many subjects. But when one gets possessed by Krishna, enchanted by Manohar, then he can give up everything and anything. So now he goes on and describes something of different points. Not just to in my summary, I'm going to go on here to some other some more teachings that Narada Muni, of course, is teaching his disciple Vyasadeva, and pointing out some of the faults in his presentation so far in the Vedas and how he can improve that by bringing out the intimate rasic exchanges of Krishna's beloved devotees. Then in the same chapter where Narada Muni is speaking to his disciple Vyasadeva, in chapter 5 of the first canto, text 35, Narada Muni says, Yiracha kriyate karma bhagavat paritoshanam jnanam yattad adinam hi bhakti yoga samanvitam. Narada said, actions that please the Lord. Kriyate karma bhagavat paritoshanam. They give toshan, give satisfaction to Bhagavan, Hari. They should be performed, and knowledge that ultimately guides one to devotional service to the Lord should be cultivated. This will counteract the opposite reactions of karma and jnana and awaken a favorable mood for devotional service to the Lord. He's explaining here, he's teaching the proper path of action. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes three types of karma. What are those three types of karma? Karma, akarma, and vikarma. What's karma?
Karma is action which you get reaction for.
But it's prescribed in the Vedas. That's the important part. It's not just any karma. Pigs are also doing karma. Karma means action. Action which is guided by the Vedas, prescribed in the Vedas, that's karma. Karma kanda. Every karma means action. Birds are doing karma. Dogs are doing karma. Yes or no?
Yes.
No, they're not doing karma. They're just moving, acting. Karma means actions prescribed in the Vedas. Ashram dharma, it's called ashram dharma, varna dharma, the actions of, what are the proper actions for a brahmachari, proper actions for a grihastha, for a brahman, a kshatriya. There's rules and regulations. You're supposed to follow the Vedas. When you follow those Vedas and act accordingly, then you're doing karma. Human beings are supposed to, duty means karma, action. Dharma means action. Action means duty. Duty means action. What action? Any whimsical action you think of? No, action is guided by the Vedas. That's proper karma. And it gives good reactions or bad reactions. If you don't follow the Vedic injunctions, you get bad reactions, go to hell, become an animal. If you follow Vedas, and you get good reaction, but you stay in the material world, so it's also bad because you have to take another birth. You're bound. So that's karma. Then what is the next thing? Vikarma. Vikarma is against karma. V means against the Vedas, against the law. The Vedas give the law. There's laws for kshatriyas, laws for grihasthas, laws for vanapras. So you go against the law, that's vikarma, that's sin, become animal, go to hell. No happiness in this life or nor the next. That's vikarma, against the Vedas. Animal behavior, whimsical behavior, just like animal. Do your thing, feels good, do it. So that's pig life. Pig does what he feels, dog does what he feels, human does what he feels, then he's pig, he's dog. And next life, you want to do what you feel? Then become dog, become pig. Human beings are meant for law, for responsibility, higher order, higher responsibility. Higher position, higher responsibility. Higher form, higher responsibility. Responsibility of the prime minister is greater than a rickshaw driver, rickshaw wala. Higher position, big responsibility. The human life is a higher body, higher brain, and you use it for dog life? Pig life, then become pig. Why I give you a big brain to be a pig? Big brain to figure out how to eat in a better pig way. Just be a pig. Big brain is meant for realizing God. So that's vikarma. Then there's akarma, which means not bound by the Vedic injunctions. The Vedas keep you bound in the cycle of karma, dharmart karmoksha. So akarma is bound by the law of love. Loving devotional service is beyond the Vedas. So that's our karma. There's no reaction. No reaction is material world. Any activity you do for Krishna, that's bhakti, that's transcendental. It has nothing to do with karma. That's why it says akarma. It's not karma. Bhakti is not karma. Because karma only functions in the material world, high or low. And bhakti is transcendental action. So you get no reaction in the material world. It only promotes you to Godhead. It is lila. Bhakti means lila, pastimes, interacting with the Lord for His loving pleasure. So it's our karma. It's free from any karmic taints or connections. There's no connection of karma in bhakti. Bhakti is transcendental expression of love. It's simply love. Bhakti means love. Bhakti priti prema. Bhakti priti prema means love. Loving exchanges means lila. Someone's engaged in lila with the Lord. It has nothing to do with karma or vikarma or akarma. It's akarma, but it's transcendental lila. Yashoda and Nanda are not having karma with Krishna, having lila. So now, this is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is first canto, sixth chapter, verse 35 and 36. I'm not exactly sure who's speaking here. I would assume it's Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages. Adnamishranya. Yam adibir yoga pate kamaloba hato muha muhu hukunda sevya yadvat tadatmadha nashamyati. The hearts of the living entities are afflicted with desires. Means they're tortured. The human beings, let's say, the human beings or the living entities, everyone. Every living entity is tortured and afflicted with material desires to indulge in sense gratification. In such a condition, the description of Lord Hari's pastimes is the only boat for crossing over the ocean of material existence. So this is the only way is to hear Krishna's glories. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, the previous verse, Narada Muni is saying that Srimad Bhagavatam is a cure for karma and jnana and yoga. One can counteract all the reactions of karma, jnana and yoga, which keep one in the material world, by performing devotional service, bhakti yoga, samanvitam. And Sutta Goswami explains here that those that are full of kambhav, the cure for kambhav and lust, anger and greed is only hearing about Hari's pastimes, which the Bhagavatam is full of. First, they're presenting the problem, which is material life, material conditioning. Then the solution is given as the Bhagavatam. So, now this is a verse, this is verse 36. First canto, chapter 6, verse 36. Sarvam tadidam akyatam yaprishtoham tuyanaga janma karma rahasyam me avatash chatmatoshanam. If you say that by the path of Ashtanga Yoga one can achieve the same result, then please hear me. In other words, I can follow the path of Ashtanga Yoga. Right? Yama Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Atyahara, Pratyahara, then Dharana, Dhyanam, Jivana Smriti and Samadhi, the Eightfold Path of Yoga. I can follow this yoga path and I can also cross over material existence. Then please hear me if you believe that. Persons who follow the yoga practice or the path of yoga by practicing Yama Niyama, etc., they repeatedly become misguided by the temptations of lust and anger. But there is so much happiness in the service of Mukunda that one does not leave it and go elsewhere. This service directly gives the living entities self-realization. So there's a comparison being made here. On the yogic path, one may follow the path of yoga, Ashtanga yoga, meditation, and pursue samadhi. But in his pursuit of samadhi, or even in samadhi, he can drift away. He can be distracted and leave that path. He can be absorbed in meditative samadhi and still leave that path. Because the desire seeds are still in the heart. They're sublimated or slightly covered by his intense external practice, but the seeds are still there. Lord Brahma explains in Brahma Samhita, he says that the karmadi nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. Karmadi nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. By engaging in bhakti bhajan, karma nirdahati. Nirdahati means killed, destroyed. The karma beach, the punya beach and the papa beach. The desire to engage in sinful activities, papa beach. Punya beach means the desire to do good deeds, good things, pious or religious activities, materially tinged religious activities, not pure dharma. Punya beach and papa beach are destroyed only by bhakti bhajan. So the problem with Ashtanga Yoga or Yogic Samadhi is that one may still be incited by the dormant desires within his chitta. It's called samskaras. Samskaras for lust and greed. So in the presence of an udipan, he may be absorbed in the forest, sitting on a deer skin and then a kusa mat and then some woolen asan. A very sanctified, pure setting. Very quiet, absorbed in yoga samadhi. But the sanskar is there in his chitta, in his consciousness. It's deeply embedded in his consciousness. Lusty desires from previous activities in this life or previous prior lifetimes. So then when some udipan or stimulant comes from the environment, it can even be fish. In the case of Sobari Muni, it was fish. He was under the water and he saw some fish copulating and became agitated. So, or he's sitting in the forest in a lonely place, yogic samadhi. And then some Menaka comes, society girl, Tilottama, Ramburu, Urvasi, Menaka. She comes and ching, 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 ching. So that ching ching, the sound of that is not a Chinaman, it's a ching ching. Ching ching means the sound of the ankle bells or the nupura or kinkini, waist bells. Then that becomes udipan, that becomes a stimulant, shabda. That sound enters his ear. Then that sound goes and stimulates, it passes over his consciousness, passes over the surface of his consciousness, his chitta. And then it looks for some impression. And in his consciousness there's some impression, some groove, because he was married before. And he had heard so much ankle bells of his wife coming to approach him for various services, let's say. So that sound moves over the consciousness, and if there's no samskara there, it just moves over, out. There's some samskara impression, deep impression, very deep. Then that sound goes and then falls into that depression in the chitta. That's called samskara. Then when that sound from the external environment, which is called udipan or stimulant or excitant, when that sound mixes with the samskara, what rises from that samskara is called a vasana. Vasana rises from the samskara like a vapor. And that vasana means desire. Now, the samskara is very deep, the tendency to enjoy in a particular way. If the samskara is very deep, then when it mixes with the stimulant, then it creates a desire, and the desire becomes very strong, very forceful. And the desire, right, it becomes so strong that it shakes the consciousness. So whatever level you're in, whether you're subconscious or whether you're subliminally conscious, or even if you're in Turiya state, which is fourth level of samadhi, and samadhi in Turiya, practically transcendental, as that vasana is very strong, it just, hey, wake up, yogi, wake up. Acha, bapare, bap. Then it's like wedding bells. Here comes the bride, here comes the bride. Now this is being spoken by Sudha Goswami. Persons who follow the path of yoga repeatedly become misguided by the temptations of lust and anger. So I was giving some explanation how that happens. But there is so much happiness in Mukunda Seva that one does not leave it and go elsewhere. Like Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was in Benapole and he was doing Nam Seva. Mukunda Nam Seva. Mukunda Nam Seva. What was his Nam Seva? Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam. He was chanting the holy name of the Lord, Mukunda Nam, Hari Nam, Hare Krishna Mantra, Maha Mantra, and meditating on the meaning of the name and the qualities and form and pastimes of the Lord. And then Maya came. Maya Devi came. Ching, 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 ching. Not only ching, ching, but in so many sweet words. Oh, Haridas. Oh, Prabhu. I can't live without you. You're my everything. I can't live without you. You're my everything. You're my everything. I love you more than anyone. These are standard mantras, right? Standard mantras ladies use, or men use, whatever. I can't live without you. I love you more than anyone. You're my everything. Please enjoy with me. You're so young and strong and irresistible. And he said, okay, that's cool, but just wait. Just relax. Sit down and listen to my chanting. So she came for 3 days. Heard his chanting, and then, so first day all her past karma was wiped out, second day all her present karma was wiped out, and third day her future prospect was established. So the third day she got initiated. And then he gave her the service, then he gave her seva, because Guru gives seva. He says, you do Nam and worship Tulsi. So this is the so much happiness in Nam Seva that Haridas did not leave it and go elsewhere. To become fixed in the Supreme Lord is called Shama, or peacefulness. So one achieves peace by this process. So the yogis, the bogies, the sense enjoyers, the renunciates, and those who desire liberation, they're actually not peaceful. There's different levels of disturbance in their consciousness. And that's pointed out by Krishna's Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta. Krishna Bhakta Naishkama Ateva Shanta. That the Krishna devotee is certainly peaceful. Ateva. Ateva means certainly. He's certainly extremely shant or peaceful. Why? Because he has no desire. Nishkam. Nishkam means no kam. He doesn't want anything of this world, anything of the higher world, or anything of the spiritual world. He doesn't want any kind of mukti. Adhanam na janam na sundaram kapitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmane janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoitakitvai. So there's no calculation in his approach to the Lord. He's not approaching the Lord say, Lord, I'm approaching you for mukti. No. I'm doing bhakti for bhakti. I'm trying to please you to please you. That's all. I please you now. Give me some money. I want some bangles. Look, I've been cooking you for 3 months. I've been cooking every day your dinner. I've been helping you for 3 months. I haven't asked you for any money for 3 months. Now, give me the money. Acha, is a business? That's right. It's called marriage. Marriage business. I scratch your back. You scratch my back. You don't scratch my back, then out the door. This is my house, remember. This is my house. Actually, it's your father's house, because he gave you the money to go to school, to get knowledge, to start with. It's your father's house. But you think it's your house, because if he didn't send you to school, then you wouldn't know computer science, and you couldn't go to America, and you couldn't get a job, couldn't make any money, and buy a flat, and then call it your flat. So it's your father's flat. If your wife was smart, she'd say, yeah, it's not your flat, it's your father's flat. You're flat. You're flat. It's your flat? No, you're flat. You are flat. You had nothing. Nirmama. Everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to your father or God. You came into this world naked and foolish and stupid. It wasn't for your father. It wasn't for God, you couldn't be maintained. It wasn't for God's representative, your father, you couldn't get education. Without education, you have no qualification, no vocation. No education, no qualification, no qualification, no vocation. No vocation, no vacation. No vacation, no recreation. No recreation, no sensation. No sensation, no explanation. If there was no sensation, you don't have to explain to anybody what happened. So it's like this. So this, in this verse, Siddha Goswami is explaining that only bhakti can give one peace. Although yogis try so much to be shanti, 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 hi, shanti. So now, this, of course, he was told by Vyasadeva to sit down and do meditation on Krishna. And so he did that in his ashram. He sat down and fixed his mind and steadied his heart with devotional service. Then this verse is there. Siddha Goswami is describing what happened to Narada Muni after he entered samadhi. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam chad tadapashrayam. This is 1st Canto, chapter 7, verse 4. This describes his bhakti samadhi. When Vyasadeva's heart became purified, he attained samadhi through the process of bhakti. Then he saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also saw Maya, situated a little distance from Lord Krishna, as a shadow of the eternal spiritual energy of Krishna, the omniscient Lord. And this is chapter 1 of Bhagavatam, chapter 7, verse 6. Anarto pashamam sakshat bhakti yoga matokshije lokastya janato vidvamsh chakre satvata samhitam. Prabhupada often quotes this verse. But not only that, Vyasadeva saw that devotional service to the Transcendental Personality of Godhead is the only remedy for destroying the living entity's anarthas. The greatly learned Vyasadeva then wrote this rewrote, according to the Acharyas, edited this transcendental literature, Bhagavatam, to benefit the ignorant people. By hearing this transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, the living entities can awaken devotional service to Krishna. This bhakti destroys living entities' lamentation, illusion, and fear. So then after compiling the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva systematically taught it to his son. And then this is a last verse. This is spoken by Siddha Goswami because he's showing his respect here. This is a verse where he's glorifying Shukadeva Goswami. This is Canto 1, Chapter 2, Verse 3, and this is the last verse of this chapter. There's 44 texts in this chapter, the second ray, describing the advent of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the advent of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, Vyasadeva taught it to Shukadeva, and Shukadeva relished it and made it even sweeter by speaking it with all of his revelations and realizations. He spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj, just as a parrot, when a parrot bites a mango fruit, although the mango by nature is sweet when it's ripe, if it's bitten by a parrot, it becomes even sweeter because there's some saliva in the parrot's mouth, some type of saliva or some juice. And when that juice mixes in the mango becomes even sweeter. So when Shukadeva Goswami spoke that Bhagavatam, he injected in those words of Bhagavatam his own sweetness, his own realizations and detachment and love for Krishna. Although he heard from Vyasadeva, he made it even sweeter. That's why he's called Shukadeva. And moreover, we understand from Brahmavivad Puran, there's a story of how the Bhagavatam appeared, and it says that Shukadeva Goswami is actually the personal parrot of Srimati Radharani. Shuka means tota, tota means parrot. So just shortly before he came as Shukadeva Goswami, he was the parrot of Srimati Radharani. He always lived sitting in the kadamba trees, hearing Radharani's talks and seeing the pastimes, eyewitness account as a parrot, recording everything. And then that parrot was ordered, now we are leaving this world, Krishna swadamo pakate dharmakanada bisaha. Krishna is going to his own abode and I'm going with him, Radharani is going with him, upagate, going back. So Shuk Tota which Tota it was, it's not told, but one of Radharani's parrots. She had a couple different pet parrots, Manjubhashini and Shukshmadi. Shukshmadi and Manjubhashini are two parrots of Radharani, and Krishna has Vichakshana and Daksha. So one of those parrots was ordered by Radharani, you stay here in this Dwapara Yuga and you speak the glories of my glories and Krishna's glories, the Bhagavatam. So that parrot flew and flew and flew, and one day Vyasadeva's wife, Satyavati, she was, because when you yawn, you're supposed to cover your mouth, right? Because if you don't cover your mouth, a parrot may fly in. Or if you don't cover your mouth, then you have to snap your fingers. Why do people snap their fingers? Because that makes ghosts and prates run away. If you ever go to a Ghostbuster, these exorcists, they always go like this, because that sound drives away ghosts and boots. So when you see many village-type people that grow up in Indian customs, and if they yawn, they go, is when you go like that, so no ghosts will come inside. This was not a ghost, it was Radharani's parrot. So Satyavati, the wife of Vyasadeva, she went, and a parrot went inside her mouth, and she became pregnant. And then that parrot stayed 16 years in her womb and came out of Sukadeva Goswami. Quite a parrot. Women can't bear 9 months, what to speak of 16 years. But this is a transcendental arrangement. So this Sukadeva Goswami made everything sweet. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is closing his chapter with the advent of the Bhagavatam by glorifying Sukadeva Goswami by using a verse spoken by Sudha Goswami from 1-2-3 Bhagavatam. Yaswana bhava makila shruti saramekam hadyatma deepam atiti tirshatam tamondam samsaridam karuna yaha purana guhyam tam vyasasunam upayami gurum muninam. Siddha Goswami said, we take shelter of Sri Shukadev, the son of Vyasadeva and spiritual master of the sages, who mercifully described the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is like a brilliant sun, Nadyatma Deepam, which is the essence of all Vedic literature, Akila Shruti Saram, Akila Shruti Saram, the essence of all Vedic literature, and which is attained through samadhi to those who are materialistic, yet desirous of getting freedom from the darkness of ignorance. So this verse, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also taking shelter of Sukadeva Goswami and praying for his mercy. And we can appreciate that this Srimad Bhagavatam is Akila Shruti Saram. The essence of Akila means all the Shrutis. All the Vedic literatures, the essence is contained here. Tomorrow we'll start with the third ray of Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean this Bhagavat. Arka Marichimala, which is called the purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes about the contents and some of the glories and benefits of reading Bhagavatam. And beginning with the fourth ray, we actually begin the discussion of Sambandha Gyan. The first three rays, or first three chapters of this book, Sri Bhagavat Arka Marichimala, are setting the foundation to begin the study. That the Vedas are the best source of knowledge, and all the Vedas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. So hearing different glorifications and understanding of the advent, how the Bhagavatam came about, and the glories and benefits, will have some confidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can hear the contents being summarized in the remaining 17 rays of this book. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki
jai!
Any questions? Yes.
This wonderful example Maharaj you gave about the sound traveling on the
surface of the chitta.
And those impressions. And
like moon craters or something, you know, craters on the moon.
Hidden memories which are not active until something reminds
it. Yeah, the samskara.
I heard that bhakti is like when you feel.
Bhakti is like a disc defragmenter. Defragmenter? Disc defragmenter, disc cleanup. Your disc gets all these little blippers in it, little blippers and gurks and you know, gremlins, disc gremlins, and you hit the disc defragmenter and disc cleanup. So bhakti goes along. Hey, what's this? Can't get out of here. And digs up all that, those, and puts them in a garbage can and throws them out. Then what happens is that if there's any depression is left, it gets filled up with bhakti sanskaras, because bhakti is also sanskara. So bhakti, that's why you see some children are 1 year old, and they pick up the mridanga, haribo, haribo. He just starts playing mridanga because he has sanskaras from last life, because he practiced bhakti in his last life. He's a natural. You see some people, they speak so nicely, or they sing so nicely, or because there's some samskaras. The bhakti samskaras continue. Even material samskaras can continue. It's not always lost. Samskaras continue, but what you've accumulated externally in this world, you leave that. Your wealth, but your samskaras, like your samskara for making money. That's why every agarwal, the kid's 9 years old, all right, 9-year-old agarwal, he's wheeling and dealing. Because he's been an agarwal for 100 generations. So it's a sanskara. So material sanskara is, like, sometimes it's a misunderstanding. People say when you die, everything is lost. You must have heard that.
Yes, Maharaj.
No, everything out here is lost. You know, your wife is lost and your house, everything's lost. So they say don't get attached to all those things because it's lost. But your sanskaras are not lost because that's what carries you to the next body. Yet you lose your, externally you die, you lose your wife, but she's a deep sanskara in your brain, so you become woman in the next life. Samskar is not lost. That's the template. That's a template to produce the next body, is this consciousness. So what happens is bhakti, first of all, bhakti removes this fragmentor. Fragmentor? Fragmentator, whatever you call it?
Defragmentation.
So that it goes in and cleans up the disc. So bhakti goes in, that's what it says. Nashta priyesho badreshu nityam bhagavata. It says nashta priyesho badreshu nityam bhagavata saving. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, one becomes nishta in bhakti, because all those samskaras start to get removed. So you have so many samskaras to engage material activity, and then maybe the stimulation for those samskaras comes into your environment, but the samskaras are removed, and you say, wait, is it? What is it? This is very strange. Before, if I would be in the presence of this sense object, I would get disturbed. But now I'm not getting disturbed, because the samskara has been taken out by intense bhakti. Before, you just look at a woman and go, Now it's like, okay, whatever. Because that samskara is gone. This is the proof. Nishtika, nishtita. You become bhakti bhavati nishtiki.
So does mean it's not just...
That's why Brahma is saying. It says, karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. It's in Brahma Samhita. Karmani. The karmani means the samskaras. Nirdahati means destroyed, removed, abolished. Gone, defaced, erased, deleted, however you want to say it, and whatever terminology you want to use. Deleted, thrown into your trash can, and trash can emptied. And then, and saved file, and this file, and any file, and hidden files, and all gone. No trace.
So these bhakti samskaras, they have to be like very deep impressions also. The result of coming in contact with something impressive, right? It's not just studying, memorizing shlokas. It's something of...
The thing is, this is what Krishna is telling in Gita about aversion. Attachment and aversion are two sides of the same coin. Because if you're very averse to something, that makes a deep samskara for that thing. Mm-hmm. Like some brahmacharis, they're always saying, oh, I hate women, I hate women, I hate women. Women. Like he's really averse to women. So that creates a deep samskara for women. But hatred. And that's also wrong. Krishna says you should be equal poise. They're just, you don't hate anything, don't like anything. Material. Because that'll bind you. That will bind you. Aversion will also bind you. Because at the time of death, the thing that you thought about, the deepest impression is mine was I hate women. So at the time, I hate women. Women! And then Brahmachari becomes Brahmacharini. Bhaktin Kathy. In the Brahmacharini ashram in Prague. Right? That's Poland, Prague. Prague or whatever. So, but bhakti, we should very much get in. That's why we should develop intense ruchi or attachment to bhakti. Once Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Ramanriti and Krishnamala Mandir, and my Guru Bhai was there. His name was Balaram Sharma. He's not initiated yet. He's a Brijvasi, and he's not... He's not now in ISKCON these days, but he's doing his own preaching work, his own mission. His name is Balaram Sharma. He was my friend. I met him in 1978 when he came to Berkeley. This is like 74 or so. He joined right around that time, 75, 74. So he's there, and then Prabhupada's saying, so we, Boma Ijadi, he said, Yasyatma Buddhi Kuna Patriotiki, Boma Ijadi. So we should not, one should not become attached to his place of birth. It's very bad to become attached to your birthplace. Oh, I'm from Bombay. I'm born in Bombay. Oh, big deal. And I'm born in New York. You know, this, don't become attached. This is Maya. This will bind you, keep you bound in the material world, repeated birth and death. And one should not be attached to the birthplace. And so he raised his hand. He said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, you said we should not be attached to our birthplace. But, you know, I'm born in Nandagram. I'm born in Vrindavan. I'm very attached to Vrindavan. Nidiban, Sevakun, Jimuna, Govardhan. Prabhupada laughed and he said, no, this attachment is all right. You can be attached to the holy Dham. So bhakti, when the performance of bhakti, we become very attached to bhakti. Because Krishna is telling in Gita, you should be free from attachment and aversion. This is why I'm telling this point. But in bhakti, you should be very attached to bhakti, very attached to Krishna's holy name, very attached to Krishna's glories, very attached to Krishna's pure devotees. And that attachment will liberate you, will purify you, and give you the higher taste. So that attachment will create strong samskaras, very strong samskaras. So your mind will always go there. Go to the holy name. It will go to the holy name. Go to Krishna's pastimes. You're walking down the street and you see something immediately because there's pastimes. You have so many samskaras for Krishna's pastimes. You told so many pastimes. You read about so many pastimes. You wrote about so many pastimes. You published books about so many pastimes. When you walk down the street, you see anything, it becomes a stimulant for Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's name. You go down and you see some people on the Juhu Beach are doing karate. Guy comes up like this and he turns around and kicks. Say, hey, look, Dhanakasura. Without even thinking. Because that's what Dhanakasura. An ass will attack you with front side. He'll go, ha ha. And then when he wants to kick you, he'll turn around and go, tong. So the karate guy goes, ho. Comes at you front side. Then he turns around, tong. So these people are on the beach, these ladies and gentlemen, they're ha, and then they turn around, tong. And they said, this looks like Dhanakasura, this ass demon, you know, Taliban. Immediately I thought. And 20 years ago, if I was walking down the beach, say, hey, look at these guys and girls doing karate. Anybody can see doing karate. Because that you saw on the TV, Bruce Lee, karate. Okay, this guy looks like he's doing that thing I saw on TV. And I have some scar for TV. And I have all kinds of some scars of Bruce Lee. I saw 20 Bruce Lee movies. So this must be karate or taekwondo or tai chi or something like that. Or kickboxing, or one of any, we have like 100 different files of all Maya, right? So that's all cluttering up our brain. Well, could it be kickboxing? Could it be Tai Chi, Taekwondo? Could it be karate? Could it be judo? You know, we have all this crap in our mind. But the devotee, he only has Krishna in his mind. So he looks, oh, look, Dhanakasura Leela. He doesn't think Taekwondo does that all. That's all. He has to look for that. He has to look, oh, yeah, I remember 35 years ago, my roommate in college, he was studying Tai Chi, and that's kind of like Taekwondo. And I met this guy studying that. I practice karate, you know, that's all crap. And then eventually, that's not there. The level of bhava, you're seeing Krishna everywhere. You can't find any recollection. All that, there's no samskaras. If there's any karate samskaras, it all disappears.